Hello and welcome to this week's Next Sense Institute podcast. My name's Trudy Smith. I'm the manager of continuing professional education at the Next Sense Institute, and I'm your podcast host for today. We've got a special edition of our podcast. It's World Hearing Day. And to celebrate, I've got Elizabeth Ellis, 80 years old, and Denise Clayton, 75 years old, to talk to me about their journey, what their life is now like with a cochlear implant, why it took them so long to decide to be implanted, and why they wish they'd done it sooner. I'd now like to have ladies introduce themselves. So, Elizabeth, if you could please start.
Thank you, Trudy. It's Elizabeth Ellis, and I'm living on the south coast of New South Wales, and I came from Perth originally about 10 years ago, 15 years ago, and it was in Perth that I had my first implant in 2013, and then I had the second implant in Sydney on 2019. And I do have family of three children and seven grandchildren. Luckily, none of them have a hearing loss. But you'll see, family will come into my story later. Sure. Thank you.
No, thank you. It's lovely to have you with us. And we've also got Denise Clayton. Denise, welcome. Could you please introduce yourself to our audience?
Yes, I'm Denise Clayton, and I live in Lake Macquarie, which is about an hour and a half north of Sydney. I'm retired after working for 14 years with family daycare, caring for children in my own home. I have three children and two stepchildren and seven beautiful grandchildren.
My goodness, you ladies are surrounded by love. And Denise, we're going to come to your family because your decision, Denise, to have a cochlear implant was influenced by a comment by your granddaughter. So can you tell us a little bit about your hearing history, please?
Yes. I was diagnosed. I suffered with hearing loss in my early 40s, and I bought myself a small hearing aid. However, it wasn't successful, and I was diagnosed with industrial deafness, and I was lucky enough to be fitted with the top of the range hearing aids, and that helped a lot. And then I was diagnosed with Meniere's disease, which also took away a lot of my hearing. I still struggle to hear in the social situations. So my audiologist said that I was eligible for a cochlear, but I was very reluctant to get one. And my older granddaughter suggested that I check into it and see how I went. So then I realised that I was still reluctant about it, but I realised after my granddaughter made that statement that my deafness had a great impact on my family and friends, and I relied on asking people to inform me of group conversations in what they were talking about. And then I would listen for their reactions, facial expressions, to know whether it was a serious conversation or happy to get my
those social cues.
So then I decided to have all the testing done for my cochlear. And I passed all of those, and I went to meetings with Next Sense. Then it still took me 12 months to decide whether I really wanted one. So at the end, I struggled on hearing on my mobile phone, and I knew that once that happened, I would no longer be verbally able to communicate. So that was the big decision to go and get it. Yes.
Yep. I can imagine. Yeah, yeah. It's quite the journey and lots of decisions to make. And Elizabeth, your journey is a little bit the same. You had quite a hearing journey with such a gap between the two cochlear implants. Can you tell us a little bit about your adventures with hearing aids and cochlear implants?
I can. And do you would like, I probably a brief journey from beginning. It's assumed that I was not even born with normal hearing, but I was given enough to learn speech. And when I was about 4 or 5, they realised I wasn't speaking correctly. And so I don't know what happened then, but then that happened again when I was 7 or 8, and they took out tonsils. And then as it goes on, 11 to 12, I was still having problems, and they were trying to treat it with nasal spray, as they do for glue ear.
Yep.
When I was about 16, 17, I had my first stapedectomy, which, of course, was very early in the process, and it was not very successful because I had a sensory neural hearing loss, and they don't really expect that to work, but they still tried, and I was a good guinea pig at 16, 17, when you want to hear. But anyway, so that then I had a second stapedectomy. The first one was not really very successful at all. It lasted for a couple of days, and then I had a second one when I was about 19 or 20. I mean, I was still a bit against wearing hearing aids, I suppose, at that time. And that one was marginally successful, and I managed. And I managed for quite some years without any help. But I did get a hearing aid after the first stapedectomy because I became a nurse, and I was trying to nurse.
Yeah.
So then when I had the second stapedectomy, I didn't wear the hearing aid. But as I had children, not the first child, but the second and the third, I did lose more hearing during the pregnancy. And so I eventually got back to wearing a hearing aid. And after that, a few years after that, I decided to join Better Hearing to try and learn to lip read. Even though I knew about lip reading and I had been doing it, obviously unbeknown to me, but I joined that, and within no time I found out I was studying to teach lip reading, which is really more or less speech production.
Yeah.
But it did help me considerably with the speech production. And so then in my early 30s, I decided with the experience with Better Hearing and learning the speech and that I really wasn't getting the results from the hearing aid I wanted. It was just making it louder.
Yes.
So I looked at a new one, and, well, they fitted on one and it wasn't any better. So then I decided, well, that's no point. I was going to walk out the door with no new hearing aid and just the old one. And the audiologist, or audiometrist it was at the time, said, well, I have got two. Perhaps we could try them.
Uh-huh.
And I obviously was one of the first people to use two hearing aids, and I was definitely that audiometrist's first person, because I walked out with two new hearing aids, and he was saying, well, the power I'm giving you would be blowing anybody else's head off, but it didn't blow mine off. At least I got some results. Yeah, so that's just the hearing aid experience, and I suppose eventually I just kept wearing hearing aids, replacing them every few years. And in the process, I learned a lot about cochlear implants through Better Hearing, And I had developed manias and tinnitus, and Denise obviously appreciates that. You wouldn't wish that on your worst enemy, I don't think. But I decided I would not do anything until I couldn't get any other help from hearing aids, purely because of the risks that come with it, I think. And so I probably could have done surgery much earlier, but still, that's it.
Yep, we all have our line. Sure. Yeah. And then you obviously had success with your first cochlear implant.
Oh, yes, very much so. It really did. It worked very well with the hearing aid at the time because I'd got to a point where there was no hearing aid loud enough.
Sure.
And you have to do something then, and it was worth the risk. And I waited for the second implant until I had no usable hearing, and I was getting to a point where I couldn't use the phone, and I was, you know, but it's terribly stressful trying to lip read with hearing aids. I didn't realise how stressful it was, but I, you know, that's it.
Yeah, part of it. And you're free from that now. Talking about hearing loss is really important, I think, to raise awareness. We know that you know, so many people go, you know, I will wait until I can't hear that, or I can't use the phone, those sorts of things. We all have this feeling about hearing loss. I wonder what your friends and family said when you announced you were going to have a cochlear implant. Denise, what did your friends and family say?
They were all for it, and my friends didn't say too much. However, one did make a comment when we were at our group meetings, and she said that she got a bit overwhelmed with my hearing, which I was a bit sad about. I guess because I sat near her all the time as a security thing, and then when I couldn't hear, I would say, what's the conversation about? So then she would have to miss out on hearing bits and that. So, yes, but all the rest of the family were so happy that I was, and I have got a niece that a different hearing situation, but she's got a cochlear and a Baha, and she was worse off than me, and she just so happy with it. So that helped to make the decision also.
Absolutely. Yeah. What about you, Elizabeth? What was the comments from friends and family?
There wasn't a lot of comments really about going ahead, because they knew it was a point where there was no option but to go ahead, as the family, you know, had realised. But the results from it have been the biggest comments of all that I've had since I've had it. I suppose one of the things I do realise that because I was lip reading and concentrating to lip read, I looked very, very serious. And Denise has sort of highlighted having to repeat. Well, I think that's what's a bit hard for other people. Look, let me say, we don't want to have a hearing loss, but it's hard for the people who have it, but it's equally as hard for the people who have to put up with us, that, you know, to deal with it. But the best thing when I had it after, I mean, I've had this second implant now for 5 years, and it was only last week a friend was advocating for me to say how good it was. You wouldn't know I was the same person as I was before the second. And that was after the first. So good job she didn't know me before the first implant.
Absolutely. So, and I think you make a really good point that it is, well, it is tough on the person. It's really hard on everybody around you having to either support you, Denise, as you said, with your overwhelmed friend, and everyone supporting you. And we know that only 10% of adults who could benefit from a cochlear implant actually get one at the moment. You're among those 10% who are doing the surgery. And I wonder what your advice is to anyone who's noticing that decline in their hearing and they're thinking, should I get a cochlear implant? Elizabeth, what's your advice for that person?
My advice would be investigate it ASAP and investigate it to the suitability, the possibility of you being suitable to start with.
Yeah.
And especially if you're not happy with your hearing aids, you need to, I mean, we need to investigate it anyway, but you need to do it sooner rather than later, because it's going to take time after you find whether you're suitable for you to decide if you're going to accept the proposition, because it it's invasive surgery and yep. You don't take it lightly.
No.
Worried about having the operation because I'd had the meniere's and my GP hadn't had good results with one of her patients, and she suffered with meniere's herself, so I was a bit worried about that. But now that I've gone to, I would tell people not to wait if they're happy and they meet all the criteria to go ahead. One story I'd like to say is when I first got the cochlear, I was sitting outside under a tree having a coffee, and I said to my husband, I know there are birds up in the trees, but they don't sound like birds. And I know their cars going around the corner. I had taken my hearing aid off and was just relying on the cochlear. So now I can go for a walk and I can hear all the different birds, the sounds, and I'm amazed at how the brain can just pick up on all the individual noises and sounds. Obviously, I hadn't heard those sounds for a long time. But I find it's expanded my learning ability. I'm involved in all the podcasts. I get onto those every day and read them. So I'm reading, listening to different ones on the news and all other available podcasts. And I feel like that I'm achieving a lot more learning before I got the cochlear.
Sure. Denise, is the world noisier than you remember it?
Yes, they are. Now they're very noisy and I think, oh, wow, and I have the option of turning them off. But no, I just couldn't believe that cells can change all that. It just was amazing. Yeah. So I'd advise anybody that if they get to that stage to go and see about it straight away and not to wait. Yes.
Yeah, sure. Elizabeth, what's been your secret to good listening outcomes?
Well, it's audiobooks.
Okay.
Really? And I practice every day. I appreciate Denise saying about the podcast, but I do audiobooks, and I can, if I don't understand a word properly, I can then go back and listen to it. So you practice. And I think listening is the major thing. Normal hearing people can hear without listening. But if you have a hearing loss, you've got to consciously listen and educate yourself to listen, which is something, and people who can hear don't have to listen, they just hear. But for someone who can't hear, and in the process of all these listening exercises, we're retraining the brain to the sounds that we've lost, and I appreciated the birds. That's one of the best things I found out. We have little blue wrens in our garden, and I can hear them, and I know where they are in the garden. And I don't know how long it takes fully to appreciate the total benefit, but I've had this, my second implant now for, 19 is four five. And a half years, because it was August. Yeah. Well, five in August. So, and only a year or so ago, I recognized this sound that I had heard for nearly 6 months. I heard this noise, and I used to, and it was a noise like an air conditioner, but it was five in the morning and it was winter. And I'm thinking, that's not air conditioner at this time. After a few months, I realized, because we're only a kilometer or so from the ocean, it was the waves. Now, that's how long that took to recognize.
Wow.
So, and I do, with the listening, I might add, my audiologist has said I get more like 20 to 25% than a lot of people, because I listen, and the benefits I'm getting now are 90 to 95% of understanding.
Fantastic.
Which is, he's said a lot more, because, and that's because of the listening.
Sure. No, that,
so
that's,
I think that's probably, yes.
That's such a good reminder for people that you're never too old. Your brain will keep learning when you give it these new things. And Denise, yeah. you talked about podcasts. Are there other secrets that you've got that have given you such great outcomes?
Like Elizabeth said, it's practice. And I practiced every day, half an hour. And I did all the paperwork they gave me. And then I practiced with apps. I had a couple of apps they put, NextSense, put on the phone. And I actually loved those, because it was hard. And like Elizabeth said, you don't realise that you have to listen. You have to block out other noises and listen. But I just found that it was it's all about the practice, that you do it every day, because if you don't, you won't get the good results. I've only had mine for 12 months, and I've gone from the bottom 25% to the top 25%. And so I'm just, it's just all about practice and listening. You can't get enough of it. And I think if you're not prepared to do that, well, then it'll be a slow process.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's certainly advice for all of us. I think if you want to learn to do anything, you have to keep practicing and listening. Yeah. If it's new to you, then it's the same, isn't it? If you want to be good at piano, you play the piano. If you want to be good at listening, you listen.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yes. I would do about an hour's practice nearly every day too. So there's the, obviously, as Denise has said, that proof that it just, it helps our speech too, I think.
Absolutely.
That's a speech. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So ladies, you've given us so much great advice throughout this whole podcast, but I wonder, is there any final piece of advice that you wanted to give to our audience? We'll start with Elizabeth and finish with Denise.
No. Okay, I will. Say a couple of things. I can't believe how hard it was with hearing aids and lip reading until I had the implants. It was just so stressful. I always had red eyes from the strain of lip reading, like I'd been on the bottle all day. And yet I don't drink. Because of manias, I can lose the balance without any drink. So that's, but nothing will ever replace natural, normal, unaided hearing. But for me today, life is just a breeze. being able to hear has made it so easy for me. And no doubt if I could have enjoyed, no doubt I could have enjoyed many more years of good hearing if I'd had my implants earlier rather than later. But that was my choice.
Absolutely. Thank you for that.
And yes.
Denise, final advice.
Yes. I find that I can now participate in my older grandchildren's conversations, and they get quite interesting after a while. I used to just sit and listen, but now I can take part in it. But also, Elizabeth, a word of advice, you can have a small drink with many airs.
Okay.
This is the podcast for all kinds of problems we're solving today.
Thank you.
Yeah. I tell Denise's thing, conversation with grandchildren, that is one of the biggest things I appreciate, because my grandchildren, 17 and 18 year old boys who don't want to be bothered with an old grandma are happy to talk to her.
Yes.
Now that's hot. That I'm so grateful for, and because I can communicate with them.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that is powerful advice, ladies. We appreciate your honesty and your preparedness to talk to us about this, and we're delighted that it's had such a great outcome for you both. I'm going to leave you now to go and have conversations with your grandchildren. Carry on doing that. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me today on World Hearing Day.
Thank you. Nice to meet you.
Thank you very much.
And thanks everybody for listening, and we will talk to you next time.